John 15:27, you shall be my witnesses because you have been with me from the beginning. The disciples were with Jesus at the beginning through his ministry. They continued being faithful throughout their entire life. They never burned out. They never quit. That's longevity. And then 15:2, Jesus speaking, saying, I am the vine, you are the branches, he said, and every branch that bears fruit, he prunes it so that it may bear fruit. And so the disciples, not only did they have longevity, but they were fruitful. They increased in fruitfulness over that whole time. And that is God's will for each and every one of us, that we remain fruitful, that we grow in being fruitful, and that we learn how to have longevity in leadership. So today what I want to do is talk about these two things, how to remain fruitful and how to have longevity in leadership, in ministry. And so I've got a lot of practical and strategic kind of strategies for doing that. And so the first thing I want to talk about is the weight of leadership. Leadership means accepting responsibility for something. Leadership means accepting responsibility for something. Someone who is not the leader never fully carries a responsibility. They can always check out. They can always call in sick. They can always drop out. And they can always leave it for the leader to carry the responsibility. Many people contribute and help out, but only the leader knows what it's like to carry the burden of responsibility. I remember very well my parents when I was growing up, and my mom would just spend money. I mean, if she wanted to buy something, she would buy it. She didn't usually spend it on herself, but if she wanted, felt like the family needed something, or she wanted to buy a lot of groceries or buy for someone else, she would just write a check. And so this would lead to a lot of arguments at night, because my dad would come home and balance a checkbook and work everything out. And he would always say to her, do you think money just grows on trees? Where do you think I'm supposed to come up with this money? And I remember, and my mom learned just to let him blow, you know, she just let it blow off and she wouldn't react. And she, next month, go ahead and spend more money than we had. And finally, one night, he just got so exasperated. He goes, what do you think I can do? Do you think I can just buy a printing press? Do you really think I can just go in a garage and print up more money? And she looked at him and she smiled. Oh, honey, you'll think of something. You always do. And, you know, only one person in my family carried the responsibility for the finances. It wasn't my mom, it wasn't me, it wasn't my brothers. We all knew we weren't rich. We all knew there were limitations on our money. We all knew things got tight. We all knew there were times where we had to rush down and, you know, put money in before a check went over. We knew that, but we didn't carry the responsibility. My mom's attitude, she's a wonderful woman, but her attitude was, honey, you always figure it out. You know, you'll take care of it. The difference between being a leader and just being a member is that a leader can't just walk away and leave it for somebody else to solve the problem. That's the difference. About 35 years ago, I came across a funny story. I know I've shared it before. Some of you haven't heard it. Some of you may have heard it twice. But it just stuck with me. There's a church in a small town. And the elders get a report, and they become concerned. And the report that the church board, the elders hear, is that their pastor every day at 3 o'clock gets in his car, and he drives all the way out of town to the edge of a valley where there's a sharp drop-off. And he stands there for about 15 minutes just staring off right on the edge. Then after 15 or 20 minutes, he gets back in his car, and he drives back to his car. Back to his office, and they're concerned for him. Is he contemplating suicide? They're very concerned. And so the elders get together and they come to the pastor. They say, Pastor, you've been observed with a strange behavior. We're really concerned. What's going on with you? He goes, oh, you have nothing to worry about. He says, you know, every day the train goes through the valley at 3:15. And it ministers to me so much to see something move that I don't have to push. I remember another really clear thing is I got in the ministry, Dave and I did, pretty much from the minute we got saved or came back to Christ. So I was immediately in the ministry. So I never knew what it was like to be a Christian and not be in some level of leadership until I went through, was going through college, and I was at, seminary, and I was at a church as a youth pastor called College Center Covenant. And I remember I just burned out there. You've heard the story. And we started going up to the Vineyard Anaheim. And I'd always take a car full of people, and we'd go up there, and we would just sing, and it was just glorious. And I just remember it just struck me so profoundly. So this is what it's like just to be a Christian. I don't care who comes and who doesn't come. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to make anything happen. I'm not responsible. You know what I mean? Like, people can make their decisions. It's not my problem. I'm just going up to church. And I remember thinking, this feels so good. Now, leadership requires not only a willingness to take on extra work, but it requires a willingness to face extra pain. And the responsibility along with that comes pain and the requirement to deal with it. You know, there's a saying I think that's very, very true, and it's, if you're not hurting, you're not, who's heard it? If you're not hurting, you're not leading. If at some level you're not feeling some pain, you're not dealing with some disappointment, taking on extra stress, you're not leading. So the question is, why would anyone volunteer to expose themselves to extra pain? Why take on the pain that's involved in leadership? And there's really only one answer for a Christian, if you're a volunteer especially. John 21:15-17. So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these others? And of course, Peter said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, then tend my lambs. He said to him again, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said, yes, you know that I love you. He said to him, shepherd my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know I love you. Jesus said to him, then tend my sheep. Peter, remember, had been boasting about how if everyone else turned away, he would not. Peter always wanted to be close to Jesus. And Jesus was teaching him something about how you love him. It's not our boasting, our singing songs about how much we love him, or boasting to others how much we love him. It's not even our emotional desire to be near him. Ultimately, the test, the measure that shows how much we love Jesus is if we will help him carry his burden of loving people, of caring for people. When you have a burden, the greatest thing anybody can do is help alleviate that burden, help you carry that burden. And Jesus is saying the greatest way that we can love him is help him carry his burden. He loved the world so much, he came and died on a cross for it. And now we have become his hands and his feet. So let's talk for a minute, a little bit. What are some of the burdens of leadership? And remember, when you give an answer, you're not talking to me. A lot of times when you give answers, you talk just loud enough for me to hear it. But you got to talk, either turn around or talk loud enough for it to bounce off this wall and get to the back, okay? So what are some of the pains that are involved in leadership, most particularly ministry, you know, spiritual leadership, or leadership in general? What are some of the pains that you have to endeavor?
Clingy people.
Clingy people. Okay, what do you mean by that exactly?
People who call you all the meet all the time.
Okay.
It's almost like an infant.
High maintenance. Really high maintenance people. Okay. They're reluctant to learn to feed themselves.
Criticism?
Yes. Criticism. Absolutely. Who's heard criticism about how they do things? Okay, six or seven of us.
Time.
Time, in what way?
Which kind of goes along with what they're talking about. It takes time to minister to people.
Yeah.
You got job, you got family, you got kids, you got, you know, and that's...
Yeah. And you know that it's costing your family sometimes.
Absolutely.
And it's costing your golf score. Okay, anybody else? Got two right here. Oh, you first.
People's lack of commitment.
Lack of commitment? Yeah. Lack of buy-in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exhausting, isn't it?
Not quite sure how to say this, but it's knowing that you can't live life for people, that you can advise them, but they're going to make their own decisions, and sometimes they make really bad ones, and you can just watch. All you can do is watch the rest. You know?
And there's an extra level. I mean, it's hard if you're just, you know, Joe church member to see somebody make bad choices. But when you feel like you've had a level of responsibility over that person, and then you're kind of failing, like, what could I have done to help prepare them better? Okay, so that's, you know, some of the pains of leadership. Now, so leadership has pain that other people don't know about. Your capacity for leadership stops growing when your ability to handle additional pain stops growing. Because when you reach the limits of your pain threshold, you just won't accept any more responsibility. You won't take on any more. To expand the sphere of influence of your leadership for Jesus, you must increase your ability to manage leadership pain. You know, it's like anything. When I say increase your ability to manage pain, it doesn't mean you have to suffer more pain. Because if you manage it better, right? You've learned to manage it. You've learned to deal with it. So you're not suffering. So you guys all know that some people can be defeated by a problem this big. And some people can function quite well with the problem this big. So it has to do with managing. I'm not saying you have to become more miserable to become a leader. You just have to learn how to understand and manage and deal with challenges and pain. So I want to talk about how to avoid burnout, because pain brings burnout. Exhaustion brings burnout. I want to talk about practical ways to avoid burnout and increase your leadership capacity. And why do we want to increase our leadership capacity? Because we want to love Jesus better. We want to help him carry his burden. And we'll get a reward in this life and the next life. Spiritual leadership is rewarding. It just carries with it pain. And so if you step back, you not only don't have to deal with the pain, but you lose the sense of reward. It's rewarding and you get rewarded. So how to avoid burnout and increase your leadership capacity? Number one, nobody's surprised, develop a consistent, vibrant, devotional life. 2 Corinthians 1:3 calls our Heavenly Father the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our afflictions. And so no pain is too great if you receive comfort every day, God's comfort every day. The pain that becomes too great is the pain that is allowed to accumulate and pile up in our life. And the Bible says that God's mercies are new every morning. Lamentations 3:23. The Lord's loving kindness indeed never ceases, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. You know, if you work in an office and you come home, or you work in construction and you come home, you know, if you take a shower, you look the same at the end, right? And that's what devotions can do. I mean, if you get up and learn to, like, you might have to deal with more stress and more problems during the day. But if you wake up every morning and you've been with the Lord and you've received his comfort and his encouragement, you start out the day just as encouraged as somebody that never had a challenge. So it's just learning to be encouraged every day. So here's the first question for you. How is your devotional life? Now, what I'm doing with this, I call it kind of a workbook thing, is I want you to do personal reflection. I want you to really think through these. And so look at them now, give it a thought, but don't necessarily fill it in now, because I want you to go home, maybe for your devotions tomorrow or the next day, or maybe you and your wife can get together, you and your husband, and go through it, or you can do it on your own. But I want you to give some thought to each of these strategies, and that might really help you make some positive adjustments. So how is your devotional life, realistically? How consistent? How meaningful? If it's not real meaningful, maybe you need to talk to someone. They could suggest a good devotional book or something. But you need to receive God's encouragement and comfort every day. Number two, learn to rejoice always. Learn to rejoice always. Philippians 4:4 says, rejoice, and again I say rejoice. Another place says rejoice always. Here's, I don't know if you guys remember my definition for rejoicing. It means to, anybody remember?
Recycle
your joy. That's what I think of as rejoicing. Recycling your joy. And how do you recycle your joy? You recycle your joy. It means to enjoy your blessings again by remembering them. You recycle your joy when you remember your blessings and enjoy them again. So when you got a blessing, you got joy, right? Like, wow, this is so cool. And then we kind of forget about it. But if we'll just rehearse it and remember it, then that joy, at least some of it, comes back. And you've rejoiced. I'm not saying that's what it means in the Greek. That's how I understand it. That's what's meaningful to me. The Bible says in Nehemiah 9:10, the joy of the Lord is your strength. So that means that if you allow your joy to diminish, then your strength will diminish and you will become fatigued. If you allow your joy to diminish, your strength diminishes, and as a result, you become fatigued, discouraged, defeated. If you remember and count your blessings, then your countenance will be lifted up. But if you focus on your problems, then your countenance will be cast down. It's simple spiritual physics. I know that's a spiritual physics is a contradiction in terms, but it's a new world we live in. Words can mean whatever I want them to mean. But it's like a law of physics, but it's a spiritual law. So the question is, can you control your attitude by learning to recycle your joy. So question, what percentage of time do you focus on your troubles? Don't fill this out right now. And what percentage on blessings? You can think about it for a minute, but really give it some thought later. And even maybe if you're married, ask your spouse. You know, what percentage of time do you think I focus, at least in my speech, my actions, on my blessings? And on what percentage of time do I complain or worry about what I don't have or what's coming up? If you develop the habit of rejoicing by taking Thanksgiving breaks several times a day, your whole life will change. Just learn to take a Thanksgiving break. And do it especially during times of discouragement and stress. So let's do it right now, right where you're sitting. Normally, I say you do it out loud. It's like when you speak a scripture out loud, or when you talk to the devil out loud, or when you pray out loud, you get feedback. You know, it's like a self-reinforcing. It just makes it more powerful. But in this case, I will allow you to do it silently. But take just a moment. Thank God for seven blessings. Think about it. and recycle your joy. Okay, and then end it by just saying to yourself, I am a blessed person. So the first two ways to avoid burnout, increase your longevity, is number one, learn to receive God's comfort every day. Learn to just let God minister restoration to you every day. Number two, learn how to rejoice always, how to recycle your joy, how to count your blessings. Number three, another way to avoid burnout, keep your longevity, is don't be afraid of or run from painful situations. Remember that God has promised strength for each day. Deuteronomy 33:25. And according to your days, oh my goodness, so shall your strength be. What translation is this? The California Beach Boy version? So shall your leisurely walk be? I have no idea where she got that. That's a crack up. It says it somewhere. I don't know where it is. And according to your days, so will your strength be. That old saying, you don't get what you expect, you get what you inspect. And I didn't inspect that. According to your days, so shall your strength be, okay? So you need to learn to address each day's difficulties with God's grace. Remember this, we don't like to address problems. We like to procrastinate on problems. But just remember this, if you are in the place as a home fellowship pastor that God has placed you and you're doing what God has placed you to do, then you can be absolutely confident that God will back your act. God will stand with you. God will give you what you need to get through that difficult situation. And of course, this is true for any area of life. And so rather than being procrastinating because you're afraid that you're going to fail or be too hard, rejoice that you are not entering that situation by yourself. In fact, you are sent there by someone else. You're representing someone else, and he is going to help you. So lean into his grace. Grace is divine enabling. And whatever God's called you to do, he's given you divine enablement to do that. And so before you go in, just pray. Lord, thank you for your grace that's going to strengthen me as I go into the situation, that's going to make me adequate for this situation. And thank you for all the comfort you're going to give me going into it and when I come out of it, Lord. Thank you for your grace. Amen. The best time to deal with difficult and painful situations generally is now, before they get worse and before they've been allowed to sap your energy. How many of you know putting off difficult situations just weighs on you and saps your energy? Some of the most powerful words in the English language are these. I just heard. I just heard that your mother died. I just heard that your son was in an accident. I just heard that your son was arrested. I just heard. Because even if you don't know exactly what to say and you don't feel brilliant, if you say, I just heard, here's what it communicates. You are engaged. You care. You're involved. You're not afraid. You're not overwhelmed. They might feel overwhelmed by the situation. I feel overwhelmed a lot, you know. You know, I have my strengths and I have my weaknesses. And there are just some issues I just really struggle with addressing in people's lives. And, you know, I don't feel like it's my strength. But I have to do it. So I lean into the Lord's Lord's grace. And if you don't know what to do, the fact that you show up, the fact that you call and say, I just heard, I just found out, I had to call you, that communicates volumes to them. They'll never forget you. They'll never forget the person that came to them when they were hurting or when they were in pain, the first person that reached out. So what are some potentially painful situations that you have been procrastinating about? You don't have to do it now, but you can think about it now, but go through this later. Are there some situations that really you just need to take care of and get them behind you? You just need to trust God that he's going to make you adequate. He's going to strengthen you and give you the comfort. And you can think about that later. Let's go to number four, the fourth. Embrace the purpose of your suffering. Embrace the purpose of your suffering. All suffering can lead to what? To growth. Hebrews 2:10 tells us that God perfected Jesus, the author of our salvation, through suffering. He perfected him. He completed him. Even Jesus, who was sinless. Hebrews 5:8 tells us, although he was a son, he learned obedience through the things which he suffered. Life's most defining moments often come out of painful experiences and painful seasons. Because pain causes us to be open to change. It brings a new perspective, and with that new perspective, there comes a possibility for growth to overcome the situation. It was a very painful situation at a previous church that led me to become a part of Starting Foothills. David had approached me about more than a year earlier about starting a church with him. And I was happy where I was. I just felt I'm just a loyal person. You know, I would still be at the church I was born in if they would let me stay. You know, but I couldn't stay in the Lutheran denomination. I was committed to the people that were there. I had vision for what was going on. You know, I just felt loyalty. I felt, you know, I had vision. And I told him no. And then things got just bad. Everything, I mean, my relationship with the church members and the staff was good, but the ministry just went sour. The kids just went south. It was absolutely heartbreaking. And, but the result of that was a new perspective, a new understanding, and I ended up starting eventually with David Foothills. I shared a few weeks ago how a very painful season at Foothills. When we had, I guess it was just a growth thing. We reached a place and we hadn't defined things very well, you know, and in the office, responsibilities with Dave and I, and I just burned out. I took that long sabbatical. And out of that, God spoke to me about what he was calling me to do. And I specialized in other areas. And as I said, the last 20 years have been the fruit of that pain, which made me rethink, what am I called to do? What am I supposed to do? What does God want me to do? Not what did seminary say I'm supposed to do, or what are my expectations, you know, what are my own understanding, but what is God calling me to do? Both those came out of very difficult, for me, painful situations. Remember this, our goal is not ease, it's not prosperity. What is our goal? Christlikeness, growth into Christlikeness. I think somebody said growth, but our goal is Christlikeness, isn't it? Let me ask it again. Our goal is not ease or prosperity. What's our goal? Christlikeness. You should always get that. That's your one greatest goal in life, is to be like him. God prunes us not to make us more comfortable. Why does he prune us? To make us more, somebody shout it out, fruitful. When nobody answers, it means either everybody knows the answer or nobody knows the answer, and I'm not sure which. It's either that's so obvious, I'm not going to answer it, or I don't have an idea. Let's look at number five now. The fifth way to avoid burnout is Fellowship with other leaders who can encourage us in our labors. Others can stimulate us to love and good works. That is, sharpen us. Hebrews 10:24. Let me ask you, I think you guys all understand that. Here's just a little self-reflection for you to do. What leaders do you fellowship with? Do you have leaders that you regularly get together with? You know, sometimes we can only get together people we're ministering to or people who are convenient to us. That's how you get in trouble when you're in high school. You choose friends that are convenient. They sit next to you in class. They live down the street from you. They give you a ride to school. Whoever it is. I mean, you don't like take character reference or look at their character. It's like whoever's, that's how I got into trouble. I just chose the friends that were near at hand and convenient. You know, the people that approached me and wanted to be my friend or something. And it's real easy to get caught up and sometimes not to have some strategic relationships that stir up the juices, help give you vision. How often do you talk with them? When is the last time you met them? So give that a little thought. Think that through. The sixth thing that we can do that will keep us fresh, keep us motivated, keep us from burning out, is remember who you are suffering for. Remember who you are suffering for. In Philippians 3:10, it says that Paul wanted to know the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his suffering. You can cross out the word cross there. It's not in the scripture. It's true that he wanted to know the power of the cross, but it just says that I might know him, the power of his resurrection, and the fellowship of his sufferings. One way you learn the power of his resurrection is through joining with him in the fellowship of his sufferings. There are things about resurrection power you only learn when you enter into his sufferings. That is, that you suffer for him, for his sake. We join him when we suffer persecution for his namesake or ostracization, but we also suffer. We also suffer for him. We also fellowship in his sufferings when we enter into the problems of his people, help them carry their burdens, and show forbearance and patience with them when the sheep pee on your feet. How many of you know? It's nice to shepherd sheep, but sometimes they can pee on your feet. Now, whenever you encounter pain, there are three things you can do. First thing you can do, you can blame others and try and affix the blame and become bitter. Find out, I'm hurting, who do I blame? And then somehow distract yourself by being bitter at that person. The second thing is, you can try to avoid the pain. You can try and distract yourself from it, escape it. Or number three, you can accept the pain and find the pathway of growth through it. Now, the first course, I think you know, is always wrong. It's the easiest one to do. It's the easiest one to fall in. But blaming someone, becoming bitter, is never a good course. It never ends well. It just defeats you and disqualifies you from a lot of good things in life. The second course, to avoid pain and escape it, sometimes is the right course to take. How many know, sometimes we get caught up in things that we have no business really being caught up in. And it's okay to just walk away from them. Like, you ask yourself, am I really called to be in the middle of this thing? Is this really something I'm supposed to be involved in? So sometimes it's you know, you need to ask yourself the question and just walk away from it. Or, you know, some situation, sometimes there's some people that you can just withdraw from a little bit. So, you know, that sometimes is a valid option. And the other thing is, too, sometimes when the wound is so fresh and so overwhelming and it's so emotionally difficult, sometimes it's okay to find a way to distract yourself. Because, you know, dealing with painful situations is a process. And you got to give people time. I was going to look this up. How long did Job's comforters sit with him before they said a word? Does anybody remember?
7 days.
Was it 7? So for 7 days they sat there and they didn't tell him to buck up. They didn't, tell him what he should do or how he should feel. He gave him 7 days, and of course, then they opened their mouth and told him what he should do and what he did wrong and how he should feel. But the fact is that it's legitimate sometimes. I mean, you can only handle, you can't overload. You don't want other people to overload. So sometimes it's good, you know, go to the movies, spend more time at the golf course. Sometimes people lose themselves at work. But, you know, it's okay to manage the process of dealing with the pain and to be patient with people. You know, we just need to give them some time and let people figure it out a lot. And if people feel loved and supported, they'll be more ready to make positive choices. But ultimately, the third course is what we want to know. We all need to realize that all pain brings with it the ability to grow. Therefore, if you are willing to face pain, you can grow. And if you're unwilling to face pain, you can never grow. So I want to move on to the next section. That was the first section, and that was how to deal with the leadership pain. And again, it doesn't mean that if you go higher in leadership, you become more miserable. It means that if you're going to go higher in leadership, you have to learn some skills. You have to put some things into place. And so actually your experience of pain will be the same, even though you're way more fruitful. Okay? Because you're not making the same mistakes others are. Now, a type of pain is stress. And so I want to focus on the extra stress that we encounter because we are leaders. Stress is the feeling of psychological strain due to pressures and problems. So stress can affect our emotions. It can deplete our energy. It can rob us of sleep. It can make us short-tempered. How many of you guys know those are all true? Taking any level of leadership is likely to add stress in your life. Why? Because people have problems. And if you get involved with them, their problem becomes, to some extent, your problem. And now you're helping them to carry it. That adds stress. And also, it adds stress because people can be the problems. How many of you know, you just mentioned it, there are problem people. There are difficult people. In fact, I came across a definition of stress I thought was pretty good. Some of you may have heard of it. Stress. It's the feeling of psychological strain due to pressures and problems. Excuse me, wrong place. Stress. The pressure and discomfort created when your mind overrides your body's basic desire to choke the living daylights out of some idiot who desperately deserves it. Have you ever been tempted to walk up to somebody that you've been caring for and giving pastoral oversight and just slap them really hard and think, you know, that'd probably be about the best thing I could do. You know, they probably need that more than anything else, but I'm not going to do it. do you know how to set appropriate boundaries with people? That's a skill you learn. That's a skill you can learn from each other. You can learn it from Jim Dealing and leaders, but learn how to set appropriate boundaries. So let's discuss what are some of the boundaries that you have learned to set with people. What are some of the boundaries that you've had to set in the ministry, especially? No one wants to admit they ever set a boundary. I'm just like Jesus. Go ahead.
Something as simple as if you know somebody is a monopolizer of a conversation and they're always just going to have something to say, you know, I really care about what you have to say, but we're going to talk about that after or save it for. And that's hard to do. To with grace, cut somebody off, you know, but sometimes you just have to do that.
That's exactly it. We're going to talk about that a little bit later, but that's a good point. How about, for instance, I'll just salt it, people that stay too long. What do you do with people? You're like, you know, honey, I think we should go to bed and let these poor people go home. What are some boundaries that you've set? Now, some of you guys are in other people's homes, so you just leave the problem with them. But those of you that have it in your own home, or what are some boundaries? Like, what are some things you say about people that show up too early or people that stay too late, for instance? What are some boundaries you've set?
We're at the church. We just turn the lights off.
Well, you still have to do something. What do you say?
It's time to go home.
Okay, that's good. You got your people trained.
I think college ministry was harder when people didn't have kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at 9 o'clock, you've got to go home. It's not that we don't love you, so we have jobs. And we instead of single one person, now we suggest the whole group. And we told them that way. And that really helps.
How about, you were talking about problem people. By the way, is everybody hearing the discussions? Can you guys hear it back there? He was talking about people that are like really high maintenance, real clingy, real demanding. What are some boundaries that that you've had? I know Linda could tell you about this, but what are some... How to set boundaries on me it was a joke. What are some boundaries that you've set with people like that have been useful? That, you know, anything?
I've had a couple guys who they just want to hang out all the time and like be my buddy, and I've told them like, hey, I've got a lot of stuff I'm doing, so if we're gonna hang out, try to have stuff you want to talk about, try to have questions.
Yeah.
And that was difficult, but it's helpful.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
I bet I had a lady that go on the rabbit trail a lot of times. We'll go on one subject and she'll get off.
Mm-hmm.
I took her aside and asked her, I said, look, I said, I know your family's important to her, because it's always about her family. And I said, I know your family's important to you. It's obvious because you're bringing them up. That's rabbit trailing. I'm going to ask you to stay on the subject. If I say that in a group and say, hey, let's just stay on subject, that means you.
Yeah.
And that's what. And she took it. Very well.
Oh, praise
hard,
the Lord.
But I had to do it. And then once I did that, everybody goes, what did you say to her? And she's not doing that as much. So.
That's great.
And I would just give her that little warning every time, and she'd look at me and, is that enough? Is that too much? Or, and everybody knew then that.
That's great.
So it worked.
I want to ask you, I want to get a bunch of more people, but I want to ask one question first. And that is this. Because it's something he was saying. Have you guys noticed, this tends to be my experience, and I might be the only one, and I might be wrong. Have you ever noticed people that are like kind of, what's the word? Like they don't pick up signals, like you're talking too much. You know, those kind of people. Like, do you ever notice that, like, that you also, you can be really direct with them and they don't get offended? How many of you guys have noticed that? That the more they're like, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, they can't get the signal, those people. But you can also say, listen, I really need you to shut up. Do you know that people, you're driving people crazy. And like, that would put me in bed for 3 days, you know. But it's like they, oh, okay. Anyway, it's just something. So you guys have noticed that. That's something to remember. Sometimes you can, you know, if the less they pick up on signals, the more you can be direct with them and they won't be offended. Let me get Mike. What were you going to say?
Exactly.
Oh, really? Huh, beat you to it. You're always one step behind, Mike. And then you next.
I had Grant Crary speak in my group, and I had this person that was a constant issue of basically dominating the group. He'd just basically take over. And he spoke at my group one time, and this person started in, and Grant would just sit here and stare at him and not interject anything. Let him talk himself out, and finally it was like he was apologetic, and that killed him. And it was really amazing. It was really something to be seen. So that was a bring Grant Crary to your group.
Yeah. You know, that might not always work though.
Once a day. day for no more than 15 minutes at a time. And that.
And did you tell her that, or did you just, you told her, okay.
I told her that she
this is what I can do.
Times during the day, I love you, and I want to talk to you, and I want to know what's going on. But I'm working, I have other things that I'm working on. So 15 minutes every day, I can set aside for you.
Yeah. I think you can generally tell people, listen, this is what I have to offer. I think this is helpful because it's practical. So let's take some more. If you got any more?
We had like a worship soloist.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And she was like, this keeps happening to me every group I go to. You're the problem.
So you talked to her. How'd she take it?
She tried to get like a really spiritual answer to it. You know, it's like, oh, this is how I ask it, dude.
Yeah.
It's not worth it at the expense of these other people.
This is not a little bit more beyond the home fellowship, but when I was a chaplain in the military, for years, I would always want to really help people, help the warriors with their issues. But I had to learn, there came a point, I'll walk with them, but I'm not necessarily going to always pick up your pack. Carry it with you, all your problems. I'll help get you to the next door where the step is. Let me open the door and invite you to step to this next place of growth.
Right.
And if they're not ready, then you call me when you're ready. I'm going to take care of other issues, other people.
Exactly.
And not be burdened down, stuck with one person in there. That was a growth point for me.
Absolutely.
But it helped with the stress.
Absolutely. Anybody else?
When people try to swear you to secrecy, you have to set that boundary. When they say, I've got something, it's really important and really special, but you have to swear you're not going to tell anybody. So you got to set the boundary real quick on that and say, oh, I can't do that. Before you tell me anything, understand I reserve the right to share with my senior pastors and let them decide whether they want to share with you or not.
Yeah, that's good.
Or they might say something, I'm committing adultery on my husband. They can't swear you to secrecy.
Right.
You have responsibilities in that situation. And so you tell them beforehand, I may have to share this. You know, probably not, but I may have to share
this. Right. Jeremy.
Mandatory reporters.
Yeah, none of you guys are mandatory reporters. You don't have to do that. We do. If someone starts going down a road, we have to say, I just want you to know that if you tell me certain things, I have to report it. So it's your decision whether you want to continue to tell me what you're telling me. Because once you tell me, I don't have any discretion anymore. Unfortunately, with the new, you know, the way the laws are, you just don't. So you need to tell people. I mean, it's got to be their choice about what ramifications they want to go forward to. They have to make sure they want to do it. Anyway, Jeremy, you had your hand up.
I would say on the same lines as him, there's some people that want to spend a lot of time with you but don't want to change and grow and just sucking on your time. So you have to set those boundaries of, you know, giving them specific things to do. Let them know if you don't do these things, we're not going to meet anymore.
Right.
Accomplish these tasks and then we'll meet again. And then give this impetus on them to move forward.
Exactly.
Forward.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on here. We're going to take a break in about 90 seconds, 2 minutes. We tend to think that growth will eliminate stress. We tend to think if I just get a big raise or if I get a big promotion at work, that'll take care of my stress. If I could just have more employees, if I could just have more volunteers to work with me, every one of those things means more responsibility. If you get a big raise, they're going to expect more out of you. If you get a promotion, you get to make more decisions, more authority. With authority comes what? Stress. More volunteers, more employees, all of those things. So growth eliminate some stress, but it brings a new type of stressful situations. So as your responsibilities increase, your abilities and skills in dealing with stress must increase. Very important point, and we're taking a break right here. Stress isn't the problem. Unresolved stress is the problem. So the key is to learn to manage and overcome stress. And we're going to open up with strategies to overcome stress when we come back. So we'll take 10, 15 minutes.